Welcome. I'm so glad that you are joining me. You know what? I was reminded of something that happened recently. Someone reminded me of a conversation that I had with them nearly 10 years ago. They said, Priscilla, you said to me that you wished you had a camera so that you could record some great conversations you were having with really remarkable people so that you could share them with everybody. Well, now there's a camera, and you're the everybody that I want to share this conversation with. This is going to be a good one. You're not going to want to miss it. So pull up a seat and make yourself at home. I am very excited today because we're going to be having a conversation that needs to be had, a conversation about second chances. I don't know about any of you, but I have needed second chances. Anybody in here ever needed another chance? Yeah. How about not just a second one, but maybe a third or, you know, 50th chance in our lives to do things over and maybe have the Lord's grace kind of poured out over us for a brand new start. And this woman has a story like that. I've long heard about her. We've had mutual friends. We've been connected, kind of. But I've never really had a sit-down, deep, like, for real conversation with this woman. And that's what I'm looking forward to. Even before she came out, we had an opportunity just to say hello. And, she started talking a little bit about herself. And I said, no, stop. I want all the good stuff when you get in this seat right here. And so I'm excited to get to all the good stuff. Would you please help me to welcome Pat Smith? Y'all, finally.
Yes.
I'm so glad that you're here.
Girl, I'm so excited. I don't know if I told you this, but about 2 years ago, you know, you always got a little testimony. For my birthday, everyone kept saying, what do you want for your birthday? And I said, I just want to have lunch with Priscilla.
Well, how about a television show instead?
Yes! That's what I'm like, finally. Hey, God, you know what? He has way more in store for you than you could even imagine for yourself, okay? Y'all better do an amen on that one. Okay? Okay. Because I'm not having just lunch, but I had dinner and now this.
Well, we live in the same town.
Yes.
And we had to travel out of town and sit down in front of cameras to actually get together,
crazy.
Yes, but it's good because if we would have gotten all that stuff out over lunch, then I don't think this interview would be as authentic as it's getting ready to be.
Exactly.
Is there anything I can't ask you, Pat?
Oh, no. I'm an open book.
We love open books, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, like, are y'all good with that? Like, I just believe that when you come together, especially with other women, that it needs to be authentic real and transparent.
Yeah.
Because why not? I mean, like, you're wasting the time if you don't really share.
I agree.
Heart to
heart. I completely
agree. So that's my commitment, that I'm coming to share heart to heart.
Yeah. And that's honestly what your book is all about, which has just recently been released, just in the last few months, right?
It was actually, May.
In May.
Yeah. It was my first book.
First book.
I had no idea what to expect, and so it's been a pretty interesting journey.
Yes.
At first, I was like counting, like, okay, how many did we sell today? How many did we sell today? And then I just said, no, it's not about
that. Yeah, because it becomes less and less important, especially when a book like yours, which is a memoir, really it is about your life. It is the story. It is the coming clean. It's the opening of your heart, the opening of your story, because you really want other women to be encouraged by your story. The name of your book is?
Second Chances.
Second Chances.
And it's clear. Like, literally, I had two people from two different parts of my life said to me one time, your life represents second chances.
Yeah, it does.
So in the book, I took little nuggets of my life along with other women's stories and just kind of put it together to show how really God can take some of the most devastating, difficult, humiliating, shameful moments of your life and turn it around into something pretty awesome.
All right. Well, we got to start from, you know, kind of the beginning so that we can all get the goods on your story. And by the way, you might know Pat's husband. Just a little, you know, random guy named Emmett Smith,
We got any Cowboy fans in here? Cowboy fans?
Well, if he were just
I'm in Titans territory, right? What am I thinking? I thought there were Cowboy fans everywhere, but
yes,
I guess I was wrong.
You all have a beautiful, beautiful family.
Yes.
But it's been a little bit of a journey in your life to get to this place where you're, forget even your spouse, forget the career that you have now and the book that you've written, but just to get to a place of internal settledness.
Yes.
So take us sort of back, sort of at the beginning. Here you are. You're in these beauty pageants to start with.
Now, I heard you were a beauty pageant.
Not really.
Are you serious?
Not really. See, I did it because I was like, maybe I can get some scholarship money to go to college. That's right. Why I was doing it.
Right.
But I didn't ever do the ones that had the beauty. It was more like maybe like a talent or maybe like a, you had to do a little monologue or something. But right. You could just walk out there in a bathing suit. I mean, you look like a China doll.
Have oh, listen to you. So you're wrong for that.
You do look like a China doll. Doesn't she kind of look like?
No.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
Well, you know, and
just say thank you.
I'm telling you, I really struggle with it. I'm learning to say thank you because you know what I've learned? And I'm going to get all over the place. Just bring me back in.
Okay.
I've learned that if you don't feel it on the inside,
I know.
No matter what other people see, it doesn't matter.
That's right.
And so for so many years, I didn't feel it.
Yeah.
And so when people, even with pageants and the whole nine, they said it, it made me so uncomfortable. And I go, no, but my.
Yeah.
And then my husband said, baby, just say thank you.
Just say thank you.
And now
we do make excuses for ourselves, don't we? Or we talk ourselves out of compliments. We have a way of when someone says, you're talented in that area. Well, I mean, not really. You
right,
know,
right.
We kind of want to work our way around compliments. And so that sort of is a spotlight that shines on the part of us where we feel a little insecure.
Oh,
or
a
we've
little.
Got a little intimidation.
Huge insecurities.
Okay, so you're winning these pageants because you went all the way to the Miss, is it Miss
USA?
Miss USA.
Yes.
So you are in the Miss USA pageant as Miss
Virginia.
Miss Virginia.
Yeah.
And you're in this pageant at this level, and what are you feeling internally? You've already got titles, you've already got recognition, and how old were you at that point?
I was 22.
Okay, so you're 22 years old. Tell me how Miss Virginia at the Miss USA pageant is feeling internally. And the struggle she's facing.
Okay, so let me back up a little bit. So that same year, I lost my mother to breast cancer. So my mother fought for about 5 years. She was diagnosed my freshman year in college. I was 17 years old. My mom was like that kind of mom that just, she's your rock. You know, she just tells you what to do, how to do it. My father was a great dad, but my mom definitely like ran the house, right? So when I found out she was diagnosed back in 88, breast cancer back then was like a death sentence for a lot of people. And I already kind of took that on, that I'm losing my mom. Like, she won't be there for my first wedding. She won't be there to help me through the birth of my first child, you know? Mm-hmm. And I really suffered with that all the way through college. And then after I graduated, which was her dream, she passed after that. So she passed. I immediately learned how to put on a mask. Because it hurt so bad that I just could not take it on. The
so
depth
it was
of the pain.
Easier to just mask the fact that you were hurting than actually be open with anybody. There was nobody in your life that you could sort of be clean with about how you were really feeling.
No one.
Okay.
I had one the night, I mean, of course I cried and I was hurt. The night after her funeral, I remember just having like that ugly, ugly, ugly cry moment. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, ooh. Put it back on.
Yep.
And I, now that I'm older, I can see what it was. It was, I felt whole with her, mm-hmm. you know, and without having a relationship with Jesus Christ back then, to me, she was everything. So to have her taken away, I was broken.
Okay.
I felt broken.
So here you are standing up on this platform. You feel broken on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then you didn't win the pageant, the Miss USA pageant. You were what place?
Y'all, okay, I'm going to call it, it's called first runner up. I call it second loser. I'm sorry, girl. If you don't win, it ain't no ups, no third, whatever they want to call it, third place, you don't win. And they give you your flowers, and they escort you off the stage, and then they bring the winner on, and they give her beautiful tiara, and, you know, it's over.
You just feel discarded.
I mean, it's like literally like that little, I had a dream as a little girl of that moment, and it was just like
dashed,
swept away.
Dashed.
So people say, so how did you handle that? I said, I went home and I had a Whopper with extra onions cut in half, a large fry and a chocolate shake, and then I was depressed for like a week or two before the phone call came. Yeah.
And what do you mean before the first phone call came? What call?
So I got a call because I thought my life was over. That was my, for me, it was like, okay, if I go to Miss USA, that will be my
the
way
catalyst.
To... I always wanted to host a show like you're doing. So proud of you.
Well, you know, me and Oprah are on speed dial.
Look, and the funny thing is, that's who I was like, oh, I want it. Like, when she's over, oh, I want her to hand that to me. You know?
Yeah.
And, of course, I'm still waiting for the call. So I thought, you know, back in the 80s, she was huge, and I thought, that's who I look to.
Yeah.
You know, because of the impact she had on people's lives. I just connected to that impact. So, of course, for me, it was like, this will be my way, because I'm from a small town in Virginia, Chesapeake, Virginia. Any Virginians in the house? Yeah, girl, same thing. And so I just thought, this is my way out to mm-hmm. L.A. or New York. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't realize I didn't have to win to still win, which is a part of second chance.
Did y'all get that?
That you don't have to win to win.
That's right. Yeah. Because you know what I've found? That sometimes the most frustrating little parts of our journey, the what we would call interruptions,
yeah.
that often those are God interventions. Those are the little pieces of the puzzle he's throwing in if we'll just be open-handed and open-hearted enough and trusting enough in him to believe that if he's allowed this to pass through his fingers and into my experience,
yes.
that means he intends to use this in some way for my good.
You preach, girl.
And his glory.
See? Yeah. That's, but,
I didn't, but it's hard in the moment, isn't it? Especially when you're 22.
And you don't have a relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in a very traditional church, Baptist church, and it was religion. It was traditions. And I didn't have the relationship to even think that way.
Okay.
And then with my mom now gone, you know, and me putting on this mask that everything's okay, there was no one had the ability to pour into me.
Yep.
So I learned from that is that God will get you to a place where you'll finally like break down, submit, and open your arms, so then you can be poured into. And that happened for me after moving to Los Angeles. I signed with an agent who happened to just see the pageant, and thank God she caught me before I was off stage. At the end, and she said, you know, I want to represent you for hosting. So I'm like, really? And she goes, yes. I moved to LA. Now this is where the problem came. When you have a void like I had, which was my mom, right, and I'm covering it all up, I didn't realize I had a void. So I was using ambition and goals to try to fill it, and also men, relationships. You know, what's the next, you know, what guy can help heal this pain?
Mm-hmm.
And I reconnected with an ex-boyfriend who was an actor and comedian at the time and really was on the rise with his career, but was still young in LA. And we just within, I know y'all are gonna think I'm crazy, and I probably was a little cray cray at the time, but
we all have seasons of cray cray.
Cray cray.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's really crazy. I think we're all human, right? But I say cray cray for fun.
No, I think we're cray cray.
Okay, I was cray-cray. And I reconnected with this ex-boyfriend, and within a week we were engaged. And then within 9 months, we got married. It was.
Do you mind saying who this was?
No, my ex-husband is Martin Lawrence. I don't know if y'all remember The Martin Show or Bad Boys or College Road Trip, Big Mama, you know, the whole nine. I met him when he was doing The Martin Show and when he did the first Bad Boys with Will Smith. And it was, you know, where everyone else would have thought, oh my God, you know, this is Hollywood, this is a big deal, you're on sets. We were in such bad places that it was mutually a very abusive relationship.
Mm.
And it was just, it was tearing me apart on the inside as well as him. And we didn't know what to do or how to work it out. We, again, did not have a relationship with the Lord. We were not in church. And 3 or 4 months after our marriage, I conceived our daughter, who's now 20. And she's a junior, and talk about second chances. When this child was born into this cray-cray, I thought, my baby's going to be cray-cray. And I felt so much guilt over that. And then when you look at her now, she's a junior at Duke University.
Mm, that's awesome.
Yeah, and she's doing great. So second chances, I just want to keep reminding you all as I share my story.
And then, but the relationship got bad enough that one day
I left.
Yeah.
That's when my relationship started with Christ.
Yeah.
I kept wondering, you know, my parents were married for 30 years before my mom died. And so divorce for me wasn't an option. And I think we both would have stayed in there just fighting it out. Now, mind you, we were living in Beverly Hills, wonderful, beautiful home, but the inside was cray cray. I signed a prenup. I'm real open about telling people because people say, well, Dad, you were married to a movie star. You should have been fine. But no, I signed a prenup.
So you left with nothing?
Nothing. Credit cards were cut off, checking accounts were shut down. I did have a car, and I had whatever cash was in my pocket, and my most prized possession, which was my baby.
If you're feeling discouraged and defeated,
If you're a bit overwhelmed or maybe even feeling undone, if you're wondering whether or not your future has any hope of victory, then listen, this Bible study is for you. Strongholds are torn down by the Word of God. Fortresses are dismantled by the Word of God. When you place faith in Jesus Christ, the righteousness of Christ is credited to your spiritual bank account, that you are the righteousness of God in Christ Jesus. I invite you to join me for a lesson in putting on the full armor of God. Our lives are going to be changed, yours and mine, because we're going to learn that we've got the victory in Jesus' name. So you left, and just tell us sort of, you know, the nutshell version of from that place in your early 20s to now, the Pat that we see whole and healthy sitting on this stage. What did that journey entail? How did you get to this place of wholeness and health after such brokenness?
I will tell you, and I will always be grateful to my sister. That's why I love women and sisterhood and friendships, because my sister, she's the one who flew to LA to be with me when she realized what was going on. And she's the one who talked me into going to church. And it was a Wednesday night Bible study where I made the decision, walked to the altar and gave my life to Christ. And my life has not been the same since. So that was my start of my journey. Now, I tell people all the time, just because you give your life to Christ does not mean all troubles go away.
No, it doesn't.
But now you have someone who's going to always be there, right? Right? Always there for you. And he just took me up, you know, took me under his wing and just carried me along. Things got easier, but it was still difficult. I met my now husband, Emmett, in a crazy way, in Aruba on a vacation, and a mutual friend introduced us. At a time, I was not looking for a man and definitely did not want one that was high profile.
Mm-hmm. You were done with that?
Done.
Yeah. So, all that glitters is just not gold.
No. And I wanted, I kept telling people, I just want like a man from Idaho. Like, nothing
goes down. No offense to anybody who is watching that is from Idaho.
No, like, I think, if anything, you all should feel great because y'all's stuff is not blasted on CNN, like shootings. And I mean, it was just like, you know, Idaho. Yeah, it's so simple.
Simple,
right? And I just wanted this sweet man who's just going to love me and we'd raise our kids and no drama. And I meet Emmett. And I'm like, no. But there was a connection. And I told him I wasn't ready. I'd just gone through a divorce, and I had a daughter, and I thought that would make him run.
How many years separation was it between your first marriage and meeting Emmett?
Years? Talk about a month.
1 month? Yeah. So it was a one-month time period, and you're meeting this guy that you feel a connection with. Did you want to just run for your life?
I did. I literally ran. So... I know, look at you. So you didn't know all this. She's going, oh my God. Like, so no, this is what we, of course, it was 6 months before the divorce was final.
Right.
So our divorce was final in April. I literally met Emmett in May. Now, ladies, do not do this unless God, you know, calls it that way. But that's how he called it for us. Mm-hmm. And when I met him, I thought literally, I said, I'm not ready. I just went through divorce. I have a daughter. I thought he would run. He didn't. And he said, I'll be patient with you. Let's just be friends. And to the point where I wouldn't even give him my number, you know, and because I was in therapy at the time. That's the other thing. Don't tell a new guy you meet you're in therapy. Okay? Smart move on my part. I just told him I needed time. But I promised my therapist when I went on this vacation, I would not give my number out. That was kind of our commitment so that I was not trying to fill voids. So I kept the commitment, but she didn't tell me I couldn't get their number. So.
That's not even right.
It worked. Priscilla, it worked. So he gave me his number, and then he said, if you choose to call me when you get back, call me. So when I got back to LA, of course, I waited a day, and I called him.
So do you think that you, in a way, sort of circumvented the process that your therapist was trying to encourage you to go through?
You know what? No, because then she became our therapist.
Okay. So she began to work with the two of you together.
Absolutely.
Together.
It was important. I said, if you're going to be in my life, this is a part of it. I mean, again, don't tell them when you meet them, but just slowly introduce it. And he loved me enough to do it. And then I'll tell you, and I talk a lot about it in the book.
Because there's a lot of health in counseling. There's a lot of health. It's like changing the oil in your car. You know, you don't wait until it's like at the bare end, you know, just unable to function before you take care of your car. It's kind of an ongoing maintenance, a proactive conversation. And a lot of therapy, especially for women, happens amongst friends over a cup of coffee.
Right.
With just someone who's older, wiser, more mature, who can help you to sort through some of the things that are going on in our life. And I think sometimes that idea of counseling and therapy scares folks away. It makes us feel like in some way that's just for certain kinds of people with certain kinds of issues.
Right.
While a lot of us are going home and suffering heavily with depression or
anxiety,
things that are really discouraging us. We can't sleep at night.
Relationships.
Yeah, because we just need to have an open conversation. So I appreciate you saying that, that there's health there for you and for you and a spouse.
Oh, absolutely. We've been in counseling since.
How long have y'all been married?
16 years.
16 years. And tell us about your family.
So we're a blended family. And so part of the book, in the book I talk about, because again, just because I met this wonderful guy in Aruba that, you know, had a big, you know, nice smile, pretty eyes, could dance his off. If y'all watch Dancing with the Stars, y'all know that, right? Okay. Did y'all vote? I always love when people vote because I'm like, okay, we're doing this. You got to win. Like, this is too much for me. But so anyway, we really connect and came together. But during that dating period of 3 years, we went through a very difficult trial because I was in L.A., he was in Dallas. And we're both seeking the Lord. But I really just put him on too high of a pedestal. I made him Mr. Idaho. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was really Emmett Smith, very human. And so he conceived a child with an ex-girlfriend during that time. So talk about forgiveness. So I tell people you cannot truly have a second chance of anything until you forgive yourself and then you forgive that person. And it doesn't just happen automatically. Mm-hmm. It took years. So that's why therapy is...
So that's why the dating for 3 years.
Oh, yeah.
Just really working through all
of
that.
I didn't think I could handle it.
And well, most women would think they can't handle that.
I didn't think
so
I could handle it.
So what made you decide to forgive and continue to move forward toward marriage with this guy?
Counseling for sure. Mm-hmm. And his commitment to me to say, you know what, I made a mistake. I'm so sorry to hurt you like this. I'm going to be committed to my daughter. And I'm going to be committed to your daughter. And especially to you as a wife. And you will not have to worry about this again.
So you went into marriage fully trusting that you guys had gone through the work enough for you to trust enough to say, I do.
Oh, I do, but we're going to still work on this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it took years, Priscilla, before
I
could actually...
Yeah, but what made you... I'm curious about that.
It just kind of floated away. And every now and then, I'll tell you, I mentioned Dancing with the Stars. When he told me... Now, this is 7 years later.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still like... I mean, I've gotten better. But it's still there.
Yeah.
And we're in church, and I love the Lord. It has nothing to do with that. When he told me he was doing Dancing with the Stars, I was like, oh, no. You're going to be with this, like, what, cute little 20-year-old Cheryl Burke? Like, she is, like, fine. Like, I have had 3 kids breastfed. I mean, like, body is falling apart. And you want to do what? And he was like, babe, I promise it's good. It's going to be business. I'm like, it better be. Like, no going to coffee. No, let's go have something to eat. Like, this has got to be business. Or I'm not going to be able to handle it.
Yeah.
And let me tell y'all, I struggled for 18 weeks.
While he was doing the show.
Because in my mind, I was having these Oscar-worthy motion pictures of him and Cheryl having this steamy affair. But no, he was just as straight and focused as he could be. Cheryl became my little sister. I mean,
that's awesome.
To the point where God turned it around again for a second chance, where when he went back to do the All-Star season, she would not go on stage until I prayed with her.
That's great.
The woman I was so scared of.
Yeah.
You know? So, again, no, I it didn't just happen. But I loved him enough, and he loved me enough that we were willing to work through it if it took a lifetime.
And that's what I hear you saying as the common thread through this story, is that second chances come. They're available to all of us, but they do take work to maintain the newfound freedom that you've been given, or the newfound gift of whatever it is in this relationship, this opportunity to walk down this road in this relationship again, that the second chance is there, yes, But it takes work to walk in that thing that you've been given and to take full advantage of that. And you've done that because now not only are you very intentional and purposeful about your marriage and about your own internal health. I happen to know that you have a great group of girlfriends that surround you.
Like the bomb.
Yes, that you all pray together regularly. You all connect. You all are keeping each other accountable. Yes. And that you're vulnerable and open with. So you're doing the work of that. But you're also now doing the work of making sure that other women, in particular, feel encouraged about their second chances.
Right.
And know the work that needs to go into their own path through your book. But what else are you doing?
So this is so key. I don't know what anyone here is going through, but what I've learned, and you probably have too, is that typically our misery opens up the opportunity for ministry. Mm-hmm. You know, your pain turns into your passion. And over the series of all these, you know, these different, and I mean, there's more, it's in the book, but all these difficult situations and shame and low self-esteem and all the things that I struggled with, I realized that God was preparing me for something greater. Because during Dancing with the Stars, it wasn't just Cheryl, but I was just mad at him for being him. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought, wait a minute, I should be out there dancing. I was in L.A., moved to Dallas, gave up my career, and now we're back in L.A. while you're dancing? Like, you're a football player. Like, you wanted to do construction and real estate. You know, this just doesn't seem fair, God.
So you feel like you lost yourself a little bit there, and it was...
totally drowned. Yeah. I mean... totally got in the shadows, but it wasn't his fault. I allowed it to happen. Yeah. He never pushed me in the shadows. He never told me I couldn't pursue my dreams. But sometimes as women, we just tend to take on everything, right? And sometimes we will put our families and other people's needs before our own. And I just forgot about Pat. So one Sunday at church, Bishop Jakes, I'll never forget, said, I don't know what God's told you to do, but whatever it is, you need to do it. And it just resonated that God had already given me a plan and a purpose. And because I had my own mindset on what I had, mine on Oprah, and I couldn't let it go. I was missing all of these beautiful opportunities he had for me.
And what were those opportunities that he was setting in front of you? What have you developed now?
So it's called Treasure You.
Treasure You.
Yeah.
Okay, tell us about it.
So it started with a retreat with 20 women. 20 women who I knew were in the shadows of their husbands, struggling to find their passion and purpose, but needed a safe place. So I put together this retreat. Y'all, I was scared that nobody was going to come. And they came, and it was intimate, it was safe. There was a lot of crying, a lot of laughing, but a lot of healing. Mm-hmm. And from that, it just opened up to now. I mean, we sell out. I mean, it's, you know, hundreds of women, and it's one of the most amazing experiences for women. And from that, we now raise dollars to help women that were just like me, a woman leaving the house that needs a bridge.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't need, God was going to get me there, but I needed a bridge. I needed a girlfriend, and it was a girlfriend who took me and my daughter in.
Yeah.
And said, you can stay here as long as you need to, and then until we moved into a hotel. So I'm now, like I call it the Cherie for people. It was my girlfriend Cherie Smith that did it for me. And so now Treasure You is that for other women.
A bridge. I love that. I love that. It's a beautiful picture of sometimes folks just need bricks put in front of them so that they have a path to walk on to get to the place that is the next step on their journey.
Like, girl, it's going to be okay.
Yeah,
girl,
just somebody I got say you. It's okay. That's
I got you. Like, you're going to be all right. You can stay here. What do you need?
Yeah.
Love on you. She took Jasmine and held her for me. That's what a lot of women need, just till they get on the other side.
And you know what I appreciate about you is that I think sometimes that all of us have a tendency to look at other women, particularly women that are in high-profile situations like Ms. Pat has been for most of your life. You've been in a situation where, for some reason, you've been high-profile. And we'll look and see that and assume that there's no problems over there, either because she's beautiful or because she's won this pageant or because she's married to this guy or because she has this kind of career. We make assumptions about other women. And what I appreciate about you is that you have very steadily sort of begun to tear down that false veneer and to say, hey, just because I have this on my resume does not mean I'm whole on the inside.
And, you know, that's one of my messages now because, of course, when I came out with this book, people are like, well, what do you know about second chances, right? And I said, oh, let me tell you.
Yeah.
And I started really just seeing the benefit in the fact that I am so transparent.
Yeah, there's a lot of benefit.
You know, I said, this is, you know, what we wear, what we do is one thing, but who we are is something different.
Yeah.
And I learned that. So I tell people all the time, I'm like, you know, like, I wear Chelsea. This is Chelsea.
Is that... Is
this
her name is Chelsea?
Her name is Chelsea.
So the wig has a name?
Oh, I have two. They have names. Chelsea, and then there's Chloe. Y'all, it's been the bomb, for real. I mean, it has taken so much stress off my life. Trying to go get my hair done and keeping it up. It's been awesome. Girl, you should think about it.
Really?
You have beautiful hair, but it has saved my life. And really, like, I've saved so much money. Going to get your hair done and cut and color is done. It's like, I just put her on, and I get home, I take her off, I'm free. So I just put my bonnet on. It's the girl. That's, if I don't say anything else to y'all, y'all go get y'all some Chelsea's and some Chloe's and free yourself. Free yourself.
Get free.
So all this is just stuff. It's fun. Like, I was back there to make up room. You know, we're having fun.
Yeah.
But this is not who I am. This is just what we do. But this is not who I am. So, like, I just think we all need to start being who we are. And then it glows from the inside out. So that's what it's about. That's what second chances are about.
You just need to be free.
Girl, get you a Chloe. Go ahead, girl. Let it all just... There you go, girl. Just let it all hang out. There you go. Look at her. Gorgeous. Gorgeous. Look. Oh, you are fine. Jerry, you got a beautiful wife, Jerry. Your wife is... Look at him. He's like, I like that.
Should I give her a name? Should I give her a name?
I think that's Jessica.
Jessica.
Don't you think? Jerry, is that good? Jessica? Oh, okay. Hey, your hubby said it's good.
Jessica and I. Want you to know that we're going to have a part two to this incredible conversation because we have to talk more about Treasure U. We need to know about your organization. And there's actually a young lady named Jessica.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
That we're going to be talking to.
Jessica, don't take offense. Don't take offense. Jessica's laughing back there, but yes.
We're going to have a conversation with her because Treasure U has changed her life and really helped her to have a second chance and a second opportunity. So everybody, just, you know, as you're sitting there relaxing, just let your ponytail hold her out. Just go ahead and be free. Give your hair a name. And then thank Miss Pat for being with us today. Welcome. I'm so glad you're here with the chat with Priscilla. That's where you are. I hope you'll pull up a seat, grab a favorite cup of, you know, whatever you got going on there, some coffee, a latte, some hot tea, just pull up a chair and enjoy our conversation. This is actually part two of a conversation I've already been having with Pat Smith. Will you help me to welcome her back to our program today? So glad that she's been joining us. We've been talking about many things, many, many things. You'll need to go back and view part one, but we're getting ready to also allow to join our conversation a young lady whose life really has been changed, right? It's completely different.
Totally different.
And she's been impacted because of your story and the ministry that you now have that reaches out to women who need a second chance. Will y'all please help me to welcome Miss Jessica Garza to our program today.
My baby.
And in Nashville. Well, you know, right off the bat, I have to ask you, does your name, your hair have a name?
It's so good. It's called Jessica.
Is it called Jessica?
Y'all are twins.
We're twins. So Pat named my hair Jessica.
Did I heard know that? I was going, yee-haw.
So we've got, you'll have to watch part one to know why we have named our hair, but we have. And I've encouraged every woman in the audience to also get a name for her hair.
I've named this guy, I can name her.
Yeah. We've decided we're all going to have names for
yes.
our hair. Mm-hmm. Jessica, we're so glad to meet both of you today. And we need to know your story. We need to know, how has Treasure U impacted you? Where you've been, where you've come from, and what's going on in your life now? Come on, tell us.
Well, first I have to say, I have Kleenex here in case you need it. I was back there crying already the moment she mentioned Treasure U. Amazing.
You've got this apple in your hand.
I do.
Tell us why.
Pat doesn't know about it.
Mm-mm. Okay. I saw you with something. I'm like, what's she up to?
So 20 years ago, I was a television reporter. So I know what it's like to hear everybody's story. And through my advocacy against domestic violence and speaking, it wasn't me. It was the Holy Spirit that said this is the best way to get to people, to make them understand. So I love that y'all were talking about the veneer and the wigs and the lashes. And so what I say to this apple is usually I ask people, what do you see?
Mm-hmm.
What do you see?
I see an apple, okay. Red, round, delicious.
Okay. So in reporting, you know that there's a story and there's different angles. So I'm going to get y'all involved. What do you see?
A red apple.
Does it look good? And then to the audience? So what would y'all think if I said that my perspective is rotten? Would you believe me?
Yeah.
So you see that?
I believe.
So, this was me.
Put the good side on the outside.
I wanted people to see that everything was shiny, everything was good, because I was so rotten on the inside. And I was never angry. What happened with me was that it was a very short marriage. Some people endure domestic violence over years. Mine was fast. And so when I finally left, it wasn't because of a typical physical blow, you know, jealous. It was the emotional one because I wanted to mourn the loss of my baby. Mm-hmm. I'm 46 now and I don't have children. I love my sister. I love Pat because she lets me enjoy her children. My sister lets me enjoy hers. So that's what made me leave.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that? What did your marriage look like?
Oh, it looked great. We were the couple that everyone wanted to be. Friends from high school, and he found me on Facebook, and it happened so fast. What they didn't know was that I couldn't... I found myself stuttering, the former reporter. I had to be aware of looking at someone for more than 3 seconds, or if the TV was on, and heaven forbid, there was a handsome football player selling pizza. At night, my sleeping, if I dared breathe a certain way, you could wake me up. Who are you dreaming about? So, yes, it was less than 2 years, but it was enough, especially when I couldn't mourn her. And which brings me to Pat, because that retreat that she's talking about, I, through my obedience, I started being an advocate, speaking. I figured God had me as a reporter once, so I'm going to use my voice. So through that, I was speaking to 1,500 lawyers, attorney serving community, and Pat was there. She was the
keynote.
And that's how we met. I met Ronell, vice president. We stayed in touch, but I came out on her show, and she says, so I hear that you've heard of Treasure U, and yes, and you were trying to get in touch with us, yes. And then Sneaky Sneak over here turns around, and she gives me this, and here's a scholarship. So I got to go to the retreat.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And, you know, you kind of glazed over mm-hmm. just a little bit the loss of your daughter, but just talk to us a little bit about that, what that looked like. In your life and the journey from there. But talk to us a little bit about your daughter.
Sure. And I could say her name is Mercy L.
Mercy L.
And that's the name that I wanted to give her. For the longest while, he wanted Mercy Grace because God had mercy on us and graced. But yet what he gave me through in vitro, he could take away too.
So you were pregnant after in vitro?
Right. Okay. So for many of the ladies, if any of them have gone through that, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's that easy. And to even get to that point that you need it to begin with.
It's already emotionally taxing. And
right.
It's already a baby, obviously, that you didn't accidentally get pregnant.
Right.
This is a baby you're longing for and that you want. So how long were you pregnant?
So I was 3 months, and we were supposed to hear the heartbeat. And that's when the doctor said, can't hear it. Let's do another way to hear it. And now I'm thinking, oh, it's, you know, my fat, the ultrasound, not through the fat. And she's so kind. She comes up to me and she's like, no, sweetheart, there is no heartbeat. And that's, and I'm very proud of myself right now because of all this whole month speaking six times, it's gotten to the point through the retreat, learning to forgive.
Mm-hmm. Did they tell you why you lost the baby?
With miscarriage, there is no answer.
Right.
They could say something as easy as stress.
Right.
In his eyes, I didn't do anything wrong. What did I do wrong? But when you put a woman through that stress of it's winter time and you want to put your hands in your pocket, and why are you doing that? Why are your hands in your pocket? Are you trying to flirt with that guy and hide your wedding ring? You know?
So it was controlling, manipulative, jealousy, out of control.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very abusive.
The point where you are pinned down to be submissive, where you can't breathe, all these are triggers for them and for you. Can you imagine the toll that it takes?
And tell us the toll that it took, because here you are, successful. You've got to pull yourself together every day, not just to go sit in a cubicle at an office job like so many of us, but you've got to actually be on camera, which means you have to look like you slept well last night and look like you've got yourself composed as a journalist.
Oh, but that was 20 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But you still have to go out into the world and be composed.
Right.
And so tell me the toll that it takes on a successful, put-together woman. What kind of internal toll does that sort of relationship take?
Well, you feel almost as if you're two people. Because when you go out there, you put on a mask, you put on this veneer, everything's fine. But yet you know that the moment when you go behind closed doors, it's going to be completely different. Mm. And that's why the cycle of abuse, a honeymoon stage, and then there's a, you know, you're walking on eggshells. The eggshells was every single day. What is it? What am I going to do wrong? Am I going to breathe a certain way wrong? Am I going to look at a man too long? So,
did you live in fear?
It was not even fear. It was anxiety of, what am I going to do wrong this time? Mm-hmm. What am I going to do that I knew that look that he gave me, like, it's going to happen tonight. Mm-hmm. So I better hurry up and say something. And then to him, the more you try to say something, the more you, then you're guilty.
And the abuse wasn't just emotional.
No, the physical abuse, the pinning down, he knew that I was pregnant and yet he'd still kick in my stomach area. You know, they think physical, emotional, but the financial. I was a professional woman. I was going to go back to the television station that I worked at. No, don't. Because he wanted to be in charge of that.
And what makes you stay for 2 years even though you say that was a short marriage? But from the outside looking in, knowing that you were being abused in that way, because that's what a lot of women that are not in abusive scenarios don't quite get. They don't quite get. And it's easy to say from the outside, oh, if I was in that kind of scenario, I would have been gone a long time ago. But what makes a woman continue to stay day after day after the first time that you've been abused?
Because, you know, we think that it's our fault. We think that I did look at that man too long. Maybe the next time I won't do that.
But what do you say to yourself that says, even if I am at fault, mm-hmm. what trigger doesn't go off that says, even if I am at fault, even if I did look at the guy too long, let's say you did, it's still not okay for him to react that way.
Absolutely. But at Hope Store, they taught me personal boundaries. I never had those.
Never had personal boundaries.
No, I didn't think I was worthy of them. I didn't know they existed. So exactly what you're saying, I dared not say that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't. I couldn't say anything remotely to protect myself. So in my mindset, I'm thinking, I am listening to him. It was my fault. So I'm going to make it better.
Did anybody know this was happening in those 2 years? Did you have any friends or any aunts or anybody that kind of knew that there was something going on that tried to talk you out of that situation possibly?
His hairdresser noticed a change in my being because I'm a happy person. I'm a smiley person. I look at people. So she noticed that I slowly started slipping away. My sister saw bruises, but I was so quick to, because I love him and I don't want them to get mad at him. So, I just fell down the stairs.
Is there anything anyone could have done or said to you that would have given you the courage to walk away sooner? Because I'm thinking about all of the women that are watching right now, all mm-hmm. the people watching, even those that are in the audience right now, and maybe they don't even know that what they're seeing in their friend is a sign that this is happening, first of all. So I want to know what you think the signs are that we should be aware of.
Okay.
And then is there anything that someone could have said to you that could have given you the courage to walk away?
Well, first, the action of my sister, simply when I called her and that day where he didn't allow me to mourn my baby. And I called her up and I said, I'm coming. She says, okay.
And hang on. What do you mean by he didn't allow me?
That day that I left mm-hmm. was literally, it was like a year and a couple months since I had miscarried. And I was wanting to mourn her. And that's the day that he told me, I don't want to deal with your emotional crap. Mm-hmm. And that's what made me leave.
Okay. That you were done at that point.
Because he could do whatever he could to me. He could pin me down. I couldn't breathe. He could kick me. But the day that I wanted to mourn my baby, that's the day. Let me mourn her. That's when I said I was going to leave. So what can someone do? Mm-hmm. They can be there for you. I knew my sister was there for me. So when I finally got the strength to say, that's my enough is enough, I knew that I could call on her. So you, ladies, you may think, what could I say? What could I do? Just by simply being there mm-hmm. and knowing everyone is different. Yes, it took me 2 years. Some people 15. What could you have done differently? I just pray for them that they come to their moment of enough is enough. Mm. There is no right answer for that. You know why? Because we think our love can help him. If only I love him a little bit more.
Well, you had a bridge is what you're hearing me say, or what I'm hearing you say, and your sister is that you had something to step out on. Mm-hmm. You're trying to take this step in faith, get your courage built up so that you can walk away. And you had a bridge. And that's what Pat was telling us in part one of this conversation is that you need somewhere to put your foot. If you're going to step out, you need a person that is trustworthy, that you can count on. You had that in your sister. Yeah. And that's what Treasure U also gave to you. And that's what you're trying to give to as many women as you can.
Absolutely.
And how is Treasure U doing that? How did it work in Jessica's experience? And then how are you trying to offer that to others?
Well, first of all, like when I listen to her and, you know, I've heard her story multiple times. I heard it at the event where I was speaking mm-hmm. and I just fell in love with her. Like, it was an instant connection. She's such a precious soul, like an angel. And I remember going up to her, and I just, like today, just kind of went up there and held her at the podium. And I was doing a show in Dallas at the time, and, of course, I love to surprise people. And I asked her to come on and talk about her story, and I surprised her with a retreat. I didn't know what she was really struggling with. And at the retreat, you know, I'm thinking I'm just having her come, so she needs to be loved on, be with other sisters, and be treasured. But it was bigger than that for her.
At the retreat, because we don't know what we're walking into, we just know the agenda. So the Friday night slumber party, we're just thinking it's just that.
Yeah.
And there was a woman there, and we were all praying on her, and yes, that's what it's about. And someone came up to me and just, like, pat and hugged me, and I didn't hear what she asked because, we're praying on this other lady. And then I finally understood. She's saying, what would you like for me to pray mm-hmm. for you about, for me? Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about Treasure U and what that represents, it's that moment that you need. And that's what I needed because I had forgiven him. You know, I pray for him, but I hadn't forgiven myself for staying for a whole year after. And when that lady asked me, what would you like for me to pray for you? I said, I told her, you know, Alfred Hitchcock, mm-hmm. I felt whew, mm-hmm. like it was just me. The room had gone away. And I said, okay, I'm going to say it. I said, will you help me say her name? Because I never said her name because I didn't think I was worthy. Because I'm 46 now, 43 back then, no children. I failed her. And so I thought I yelled it. I probably said it small. But the fact that I said it, so that's why I'm proud of myself when I came out and I just said it to you. Her name's Marcielle, you know. But each one of us needs our little something. And that was my second chance to, not so much of a second chance to use my voice. No, it was to forgive myself and feel worthy of saying her name.
That's why I talk about second chances. It's not just that one big moment in life. I just think that we all have a zillion second chances. The fact that we wake up in the morning is a second chance.
Yeah.
Every moment we breathe is a second chance. So, you know, I tell people it's hard to just say. I mean, I know that giving my life to Christ was huge. But after that, I've just had so many second chances. I think that was one of your, just one of them. Mm-hmm. And to watch Jessica now, like you said, just mention her name so beautifully, right? She could not say her name, and I didn't know that. And she screamed her name at Treasure U. And I think after that, I could just see her starting to walk. And Ronell is here. She knows. She worked with Ronell. The funny thing is we ended up recruiting her to work with our charity, Patton and Smith Charities. And she's been amazing. But I've watched this very meek and very frail, vulnerable woman just walk and walk until she could find her voice. And she still gets emotional because she's just that kind of, she's just a beautiful,
tender-hearted
person. But let me tell you, she has spoken for Domestic Awareness Month. How many, six times?
Six times. This is seven.
Bravo.
Like, that's what it's about. You're turning your pain into purpose.
Oh, yes.
For her to be able to share what she went through, and you articulated your abusive situation better than I articulate mine. Like, you were saying things, and I'm like, yeah, that's how I felt. Like, when you mentioned how, because people would say, why did you stay? And I remember being under abuse, and the mother of the abuser saying to me, well, baby, you know you got to be careful what you say to a man. You know?
Well, mine said, I asked his parents, please help me, please. He says, mija, you just got to look down and walk forward. So to that I say, I am walking forward. I'm just looking straight ahead.
Very good. Very good.
That's right.
And even better, looking up, our eyes on him.
Absolutely. Of course you would say that. I love you.
It's true. It's true. Amen. So if there is a woman who needs Treasure U, I mean, honestly, she needs a bridge. What does that look like in terms of women getting connected and finding their strength again and finding freedom and finding a place to put their feet and have some courage wrapped around them? What does that look like?
So there's multiple ways. We have retreats, which are a big favorite. And so I'm going to be doing one again in 2017. Y'all pray for me.
I'm sure it's a big endeavor.
Well, it's a big endeavor, but it's the best. I mean, it's just I went on the book tour, so we didn't do it last year, but I'm ready. God's called me to do it this coming up year. The other way is to write us at treasureu.org with your story. And we've done everything from, you know, my lights are about to be turned off. I'm a single mother. My husband left me. I have six kids. Our car broke down, da-da-da-da. And believe it or not, we've had people donate vehicles.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So typically when I get requests in, if I can find a match for that request, that's perfect. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we raise dollars as a nonprofit and ministry. So if you want to donate and give a second chance to someone, if you've had one and you want to give one back, then, of course, donate to Treasure U. And those dollars go to support women to pay their bills, their rent, whatever it takes. Because, again, it's a bridge. We're not the answer. Only God's the answer. But we are vessels to help each other to get over that bridge.
I love that. That's beautiful. That's a beautiful picture about connecting the dots of someone who's had a second chance, now wants to pass it forward, and can use Treasure U as a conduit to just help somebody else to get their feet underneath them once again and get their strength back.
And once you're part of this community, you're called like a TY sister. So now, like everybody who's been to a retreat or an event, it's like, hey, TY sister, like, oh, that's my TY sister. It's like, it becomes this real beautiful sisterhood, you know, of ministry. And you're right. There are so many women who have come and benefited, like Jessica, who now she volunteers for every event. Like,
oh, but you have to. My pastor said it best, Hope Fellowship in Frisco. He said, let your pain from yesterday heal you today so you can help others tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why she says treasure you. I'm there.
That's always.
Good. That's
always
good. There. And that's what it should be about for all of us.
That's right.
You guys are a shining example to us of hope. Like, I really think that someone's going to see hope sitting on this couch today from the other side of that screen that will just say that there is a way forward. There is a way forward, and they might not think that there is today. But seeing the two of you and hearing your stories, your openness and willingness to share, like, the real deal, because we don't get that a lot. A lot of times we just still get the veneer.
You just get this.
Yeah.
You don't get this.
We don't need that side.
We want the real deal side.
That's right. Yeah, we need to name our hair. I don't know how I got back to that, but we want
to
thank you guys.
We need to take Chelsea off.
I'm not doing that.
That's getting real. That'll get real.
I was just about to say, is that what we're doing?
Maybe next time. I got to get my little cornrows right.
We appreciate you guys so much. Y'all give them a round of applause, and thank you for being here.